This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We'll continue to monitor reports on the Pope's condition and bring you any latest developments from the Vatican when and if they happen. On Monday, an earthquake once again shook the people of Sumatra and Thailand just 3 months after the colossal tsunami-generating quake that killed thousands in the region. Several articles in this week's issue of the journal Nature look at the data from December's quake. Some scientists say the December 26 quake was much more powerful than originally believed, and instead of a 9.0 quake, they say it was a 9.3. That's much more powerful, making it the second most powerful quake in history. In an accompanying analysis written well before Monday's quake, it says, quote, "It is sobering to realize that big earthquakes sometimes occur in clusters." It hinted that other quakes may be on the way. Joining me now is the man who wrote that analysis, which turned out to be quite prescient. Kerry C. is the Robert P. Sharp Professor of Geology at California Institute of Technology, Caltech in Pasadena. He joins us by phone from his office. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. C.
Thank you, Ira.
Did you think you'd be right so fast?
To be honest, no.
What was your timeline like?
Well, I've been telling people that live there that they need to be concerned about their children, and that within the lifetime of their children, they need to expect another giant earthquake. I still think that's true, actually.
You expect more of them, then?
Yeah, I think that same thing now still applies further south from the one that occurred last Monday.
You said that the December 26th earthquake is destined to be one of the most important earthquakes of the century. That's pretty high up there. Why do you say that?
Well, for political and scientific reasons, first of all, earthquakes don't usually affect more than one country, and so there's been quite a novel involvement of scientists from all over the world and from all over the affected countries. That's one thing, but then also just by the sheer size of it, it's the first giant earthquake since the advent of modern instrumentation. So the previous earthquake anywhere near this size was in 1965. So modern GPS measurements and modern seismological methods didn't exist then. The whole field of paleoseismology didn't exist then. So this is our first shot at understanding a truly giant earthquake.
And I was really impressed by some of the photos in your article in Nature, actually showing new beach that had been created, pushed up a meter.
I asked the governor of the island of Simalu, who I met after I saw that, and I showed him the picture, and I said, "I'm confused. Who owns this land?" And he says, "No problem, I do."
But is this the same? You know, we learn it. I remember studying my textbook geology in college, and it said that, you know, the Himalayas were formed by the continent of India smashing into Asia and pushing up those mountains. Is that what's still going on here?
That's what's going on along the front of the Himalaya.
Right.
A very similar sort of a big giant fault, which we call a megathrust. But in this case, it's continent against continent. It's India against Asia. In this case, it's ocean against continent.
And so it's creating this new land we see being pushed up.
In a little bit, if not quite the same way. This land actually will disappear again in the next several hundred years. What we see on these islands offshore Sumatra is that the subducting slab is caught or hooked up against the overriding plate, which has the islands on it. And so as it descends, as it sinks into the earth, it sort of drags these islands down, add up to a centimeter a year. And you can see trees out in the water that used to be growing on land, you know, palm tree or groves and so on, rice paddies underwater. And then they all fling up in a matter of a second or two or three and become high and dry again, only to be dragged down again over the next, you know, many generations.
The second one, did that happen in a spot where the stress was not relieved during the first quake?
This one appears to just immediately abut the part of the megathrust that failed in December, and we still need to get out there to document the details, but it's looking very much like the next 300 kilometers south just broke in the same way that the megathrust broke in December.
And I think what most people are wondering about is why no giant tsunami on this one.
Your listeners are not the only ones wondering. Yesterday here at Caltech, we had quite a lively discussion about the physics of tsunamis and water waves.
And?
I don't think there's any consensus, but one thing that's really different about this earthquake versus the other is that it's an 8.7 versus a 9.1 to 9.3, somewhere in that range, and that's a lot smaller. So here here we've got a rupture that only went 300 kilometers from stem to stern. The one in December was up to 1,300 kilometers. So just the sheer size of the rupture and the amount of displacement, the amount of slip that occurred in the fault, that alone can account for much of the difference in the tsunami size.
Every one-tenth on the scale is a tenfold increase in power.
Oh, it's something like that. Not quite that much, but this one did generate tsunamis. It just didn't generate a tsunami story.
Mm-hmm.
The tsunamis locally were as much as 4 or 5 meters, I'm told.
Yeah, but you're still wondering about it, though. Even though you have that explanation, you're not quite sure that's.
Well, that's why science works, right?
That's exactly right. Good point. You also re-estimated the strength of the original earthquake.
Yeah.
From what to what?
Well, the discussion now is between about 9.1 and 9.3, so a factor of about 2 or 3 difference between various scientists. For example, the geodesists, which measure displacements that occur over minutes to hours to even days or weeks, they think they see on the order of a 9.2, 9.3. The seismologists who were reporting in this week's Nature, they looked at the extremely long period seismic waves that last hours, and what they see is that a lot of the earthquake occurred relatively slowly, and that when you add that all up, it ends up being a 9.3, they maintain. People who started looking at traditionally, when you first try to estimate the size of a big earthquake, you look at waves that are 10 seconds to 50 seconds long, and those simply don't capture all the energy.
Mm-hmm.
So some part of this earthquake took longer than most standard seismic waves are able to can be used to analyze. And sound waves in the ocean, in fact, appear to show that the rupture took about 10 minutes to occur. In fact, the Nee article in Nature this week says that the earthquake is the longest recorded earthquake in history.
And you say that they occur in swarms, and this would be the second of a swarm, you think?
Well, what I was pointing out in the article was that if you take the 10 giant earthquakes, that is earthquakes bigger than, or 8.5 or bigger, if you take the 10 giant earthquakes of the 20th century, 7 of them occurred between 1950 and 1965, and of those 7, 5 occurred in the North Pacific, so from Kamchatka and the Kuriles around to Alaska. So it's clear that the one sample of giant earthquakes we have, the one century of giant earthquakes we have, it's clear that 70% of them occurred in a very short period of time. So I was just musing that, in fact, we shouldn't be surprised if something similar happens again.
And I guess from a scientist's point of view, you'd like to see how, by monitoring this now, how it works.
Well, it's going to be an extremely exciting couple of years for us because there are islands above the megathrust here, and that allows us to look at the nature of uplift that occurred in the earthquake, the nature of the submergence that occurred, and to go back in prehistory and to see what previous earthquakes did. So I first started working in Sumatra because there were problems in California I just couldn't solve in terms of the repeatability of 1906 San Francisco-type earthquakes. And now we have this fantastic experiment, which, of course, is sobered by the fact that it took so many lives, but it really is an amazing opportunity to understand the way the Earth works.
Sure, you had that Parkfield quake that never happened over 20 years, and now you've got one in the 3 or 4 months later.
Well, Parkfield happened, though, last September, remember?
Yeah.
But it was a little smaller than we thought.
And a little later than you.
Yeah, so it's hard now to care about magnitude 6.0, right. 6.5.
So this, do you think that we're into a trend of much greater magnitude earthquakes?
My concern, it's possible. I don't think anybody can really say, but it's clear that with this big of a break, basically about 25 to 30% of this entire megathrust that runs from Burma all the way down to Australia, about 25% is now broken in 3 months. It's without parallel. There's nothing like this in the last 100 years anywhere on Earth. So the stresses that have been shed and moved to different places are enormous. And, in fact, there was a paper in Nature by my colleague John McCluskey and his colleagues in Ulster last week in Nature that said, we've calculated the stresses to the south, and it looks like this section immediately south is really much more highly stressed than it was.
And where is that section that we know about?
That's the part that just broke.
Mm-hmm. And so
they were quite prescient.
Yeah, and you say there's still stress on other sections.
Well, now I'm concerned. Well, I was concerned before about the section from the equator south, aiming toward Jakarta. The section that runs about 600 kilometers from right at the edge of this last one, down further to the southeast, we know from our paleoseismic work with corals that, in fact, that breaks about every 200 years. And the last time it broke was 1797 and then again in 1833. So it looks like a pretty much a no-brainer that in the next few decades that's going to produce another giant earthquake.
And what part on land would that affect?
Well, it would affect towns and villages about like the towns and villages in Aceh. So, no 5 million person, you know, megacities like Jakarta or Kuala Lumpur or Singapore. But there are towns of only of a million people and or cities and villages of, you know, 1,000 or so people. So, we could be looking again at another 300,000 person loss. And So it's quite a problem. The issue really also, you know, there's been a lot of talk about an early warning system, but for people who get the tsunami only 15 minutes or 30 minutes after the earthquake, that's not going to do them much good. They really need to know what to do if they feel a big earthquake. And I think now, having watched the news and the videos, they do know what to do. They know that if they're in low-lying areas, they should leave, get out of there. But unfortunately, in some of these larger cities, that's really impossible. To do that in 15 minutes, and also some of these small towns sitting on barrier islands like Fire Island, New York. You know, what do you do if you have 15 minutes to get off Fire Island?
You're saying there's a threat of a quake to Fire Island?
No.
Okay,
no,
I don't want to start that rumor. Let's not go there if it's not going to happen.
I'm just saying that may be the only barrier island some of your audience knows about.
I know it very well, but I just don't want to know. You would let that get out, and suddenly somebody say, "Hey, scientists have said we got a Fire Island threat."
So. Well, imagine you live on the island. Myrtle Beach, Florida, or Miami Beach, or Fire Island, and you've got a great earthquake happening. How could you get away in 15 minutes or half an hour?
Dr. Say, we've run out of time. It's been very interesting talking with you. Thank you for taking time to talk with us.
You bet.
Dr. Kerry Say, Professor of Geology at Caltech. Take a short break, and we're going to come back and change gears and talk about how to manage research that has important issues on national security. Stay with us. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.